Welcome to the My Ag Life Daily News Report here on this Tuesday. I'm your host, Lori Boyer. Coming up in the show today, a report on ways to bring young pecan orchards into production sooner, hosted by Taylor Chalstrom. And then a report hosted by Kylie Harlan. She'll talk about a new study looking to improve irrigation tools for avocado growers. And I'll have a look at regional and national agricultural news, beginning with regional ag news right after this.
Unsure of your naval orange worm program? No worries now with Rango, a proven solution to protect your orchard at hull split from naval orange worm. Rango is an OMRI-listed, broad-spectrum biopesticide with no known resistance, making it an excellent rotation and tank mix partner for both conventional and organic growers. Partner with Rango today. Contact your PCA, local dealer, or visit rangonow.com. Rango, no worries now.
In regional agricultural news, the University of California Desert Research and Extension Center held a two-day seminar at the Holtville campus last Wednesday and Thursday for an Imperial County Farm to School Initiative Conference. The first day was specified for workshops aimed at teachers, principals, food service staff, public health departments, stakeholders, and educators to come learn about the ag education curriculum offered by the University of California Desert Research and Extension Center initiatives. As per organizers, the California Department of Food and Agriculture highlighted a new grant that is available for $30 million this year and a projected $60 million next year. Ag educators informed how the Farm to School grant works in three tracks. Number one, for schools to apply to purchase local farm produce. Two, for farmers to scale up their production industry. Three, for partnership collaboration with nonprofit organizations, such as institutions like UC California's Extension Campus, pending successful joint effort agreements with schools and the farmers. According to DoMyOwn.com, extension offices are departments located in local counties and universities. These offices are run by university employees and volunteers that are experts in local crops, landscaping, soil, gardening, pests, and more. As per Farm to School's objective, the true mission to the land grant, University of California Agriculture and Natural Resources, it connects the expertise of UC research in agriculture, natural resources, nutrition, and youth development with local communities to improve the lives of all Californians. Californians. Imperial County UC Cooperative Extension and Desert Research and Extension Center, as local entities of UC, conduct regular needs assessments in IC, identify local issues, and conduct research and extension programs, including CalFresh Healthy Living and Farm Smart Farm to School program. The project was carried out by UCCE and DREC collaboratively. With this being National Pollinator Week, it's a good time for farmers and ranchers to know about the latest resources and opportunities for protecting pollinators and beneficial insects. Such projects not only benefit pollinators, but can also help landowners by improving soil health, reducing pest pressure, and increasing yields in some crops. Here are a few of the programs currently available to California growers and ranchers. Seeds for Bees provides growers and orchardists in California free or subsidized cover crop seeds, along with technical support. The incentive gives growers an opportunity to try out cover crops for themselves at a reduced cost so they can experience the benefits firsthand. Monarch Watch and its partner nurseries have distributed over 650,000 free milkweeds for monarch butterfly habitat restoration since the program began in 2015. In California, Monarch Watch offers milkweed seed ecotypes for the Central Valley and Southern California, and applications can be as small as for a one-acre plot in California. The California Working Lands Free Seed Program through the Monarch Joint Venture offers free technical assistance, milkweed plugs, and regionally specialized more than Monarch's seed mix for pollinator planters, pollinator plantings on private working lands in Central California. Eligible projects are limited to private working lands in the Central Valley of California or adjacent foothills. The Bee Friendly Farming Program is a certification by Pollinator Partnership in exchange for providing bee habitat, including temporary cover crops, on at least 3% of acreage and meeting other criteria that farmers gain recognition as bee friendly. Benefits include being allowed to use the Bee Friendly Farming logo on products, technical support, access to customers, grants, and more. The Natural Resources Conservation Service offers websites packaged with information from popular articles to plant selection guides, along with financial and technical assistance programs. And a California Department of Food and Agriculture Healthy Soils program offers financial assistance grants for farmers and ranchers to install projects that not only improve soil health, but increase partner habitat. California's nursery operators report that demand for nursery products remains robust. Home gardeners began buying up nursery plants and supplies at peak levels during shut-in days of the pandemic in 2020 to 2021. Sales have fallen since then, but nursery operators say business remains above pre-pandemic levels. Part of the reason is that younger customers have stepped up purchases, building a strong new demographic in the nursery market. Already facing sharp curtailments in irrigation supplies, farmers in the Northern California's Klamath Basin are dealing with additional challenges after a cold and windy spring. The winds further dried up crop fields at planting time and blew dust from fallowed fields across vast parts of the agricultural landscape. Farmers are getting 15% or less of their allotment water from the U.S. Bureau of Reclamation through the Federal Klamath Water Project. As if the Civil Litigation and Environmental Protection Agency decisions on glyphosate weren't complicated enough, the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals on Friday rejected EPA's analysis for determining that glyphosate is not likely carcinogenic to people and ordered EPA to conduct further analysis and explanation. The ruling, if left standing, will force EPA to re-examine the registration of glyphosate under the Federal Insecticide, Fungicide, and Rodenticide Act when it comes to whether there is a link between glyphosate and cancer. The ruling came in a pair of cases filed by environmental and farm labor groups against EPA, several major agricultural groups fighting to keep glyphosate's registration and usage legal had also intervened in a case. The Center for Food Safety, one of the litigants in the case, praised the court's ruling. Today is a monumental victory for farm workers, wildlife, and the public, according to Amy Von Son, a senior attorney at CFS and lead counsel in the case. She said the court has held EPA's approval of Monsanto's glyphosate unlawful and rebuked EPA for ignoring real-world evidence of cancer risks from using glyphosate and for failing to even consider impacts to endangered species. Bayer AG, in a statement to DTN, cited multiple risk assessments of glyphosate and statements from EPA on the herbicide. Most recently, EPA sent a letter to California regulators in April that the agency continues to stand behind its robust scientific evaluation and its conclusions regarding glyphosate's non-carcinogenicity remains consistent with many international expert panels and regulatory authorities. EPA's 2020 interim registration also found no association between glyphosate-based herbicides and non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. Bayer stated that they believe that the U.S. EPA will continue to conclude, as it and other regulators have consistently concluded for more than four decades, that glyphosate-based herbicides can be used safely and are non-carcinogenic, and they are committed to working with the agency to minimize the environmental impacts of their products. In a 54-page ruling on Friday, a three-judge panel in the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals sided with a rural coalition, a pair of farm worker groups from California and Florida, the Center for Food Safety and Beyond Pesticides, that had challenged EPA's 2020 registration decision that glyphosate poses no risk to human health. The appeals court ruled EPA's decision was not supported by substantial evidence. The panel of judges then ordered to vacate EPA's determination on human health and remanded it back to EPA for more analysis.
Sponsored by the California Walnut Board and Commission, delivering value to growers and handlers with advocacy, research programs, and walnut promotions. Doing more together.
Taylor Charlstrom is in with a report now talking about ways to bring young pecan orchards into production sooner.
As is the case with almonds, pistachios, and walnuts, pecan growers have a number of practices they can use to bring their young orchards to production faster. On the list are things like orchard design, water quality, mineral nutrition, and tree training. But at the top of the list, according to Richard Hirama, pecan specialist with New Mexico State University, is site selection.
If you plant an orchard into the wrong place for pecans, it's going to take longer, and you might actually have an outright failure in the long run. So knowing the site. So picking, you know, really the soils, that's probably the biggest thing that we need to look at. Pecans, like any other fruit tree, really, you have to try to find a site where there's good soil drainage for water. That water needs to be able to move through that soil profile. There's this reputation for pecans being really tolerant to wet soils, and that's true if you compare it to other crops. It is more tolerant, but you still need to have good drainage. So getting looking at soil maps, doing some exploration on the ground before you put the trees in the ground. Secondly is really do a good job of caring for the trees between the time they arrive on the truck from the nursery and the time they go into the ground. You need to make sure those roots don't dry out. That's and that and that they stay moist and that they stay cool during that time frame. That might mean healing the trees in. It might, if that's going to be an extended period of time. And that really might involve going into cold storage with them, covering those roots up with a damp straw or sawdust, sand. It's really, really important. And that really continues during the planting process. Don't let the tree sit on the cart or in the field for long, extended periods, just drying down, or any period of time. You want to make sure that those roots are in good shape the whole time. And then during the planting process, make sure that there's water, that these are watered right away after planting. And then there's aspects as far as pruning as well. You want to make sure that those immature trees during the first few years of their life, you don't over prune. But here in California, we do sometimes experience cases where there's really excess vigor. There's kind of this fine line between over pruning and under pruning. So those are probably the biggies, but one other thing that I need to point out is, one of the issues is that you can really short the trees on water, and so we want to, and this is especially the case if we are not placing the water in the right spot, and that's a really big issue if the drip emitters or microsprinklers are not getting the water to the little tree root zone. So those are probably the biggies.
Another practice Hirama likes seeing in pecan orchards is light management. Light is especially important in the Sacramento Valley, he said, and rows planted in a north-to-south direction are the best for catching maximum light.
Planting the trees too close together is a potential pitfall. Mm-hmm. Allowing the trees to become too dense or to crowd can be a pitfall. These are things that are hard to fix. Waiting too long to begin a hedge pruning program can be a pitfall. So one other pitfall, again, related to pruning, has to do with narrow branch angles or having multiple leaders on the same tree. Those sorts of issues can really, they're hard to fix and can do some major damage. I think one of the things that really separates pecans is what we were just talking about, is the extended period of time between planting and when you start coming into production. Mm. That's a difficulty for pecans. It really is. Another thing that I think can separate pecans from other crops is the sensitivity to light. Now, light's important in all these other crops too, but it's really, really a major issue with pecan, and that results in alternate bearing and in poor production quality. Lots of issues. So those are major issues. And then finally, one thing that really stands out is pecan is so susceptible to one aphid species. This one pest, really, it's the black margin pecan aphid, and that in and of itself is not the major issue, especially in California. It's not the major issue. The major issue is the honeydew that comes from these and the sooty mold that forms because it doesn't typically rain during the summer in California. So that's a major issue for pecan producers in California in particular.
Starting a pecan orchard in California has different growing factors to consider than in other pecan growing regions such as New Mexico or Arizona, but some of the same principles apply. For My Ag Life, I'm Taylor Charlstrom.
Do you know the nutrient use efficiency people? Yes, I'm talking about the folks at Verdesian Life Sciences that deliver crop insights and solutions so California crops grow to their full potential. From micros with a proprietary delivery system to solutions that help improve the uptake and assimilation of applied nutrients. Visit VLSCI.com to learn more about Verdesian solutions or to connect with a local representative right here in California.
In national agricultural news, the USDA says the second funding pool through the Partnerships for Climate Smart Commodities opportunity received over 600 applications from more than 400 groups. While USDA is calculating the final numbers, the overall interest in the opportunity already exceeds more than $18 billion. The results of the second funding pool clearly demonstrate the strong demand in the U.S. agriculture and forestry industry for solutions that expand markets for American producers and forest landowners, particularly those that are small or historically historically underserved, according to USDA Undersecretary for Farm Production and Conservation Robert Bonney. The second round of funding received significantly more applications than the first, and they're looking forward to going through the large pool of applications, he said. The second funding pool was designed to support proposals between $250,000 and $5 million that emphasize the enrollment of small and or underserved producers. The proposals also include monitoring, reporting, and verifying activities developed at minority-serving institutions. Russia's war against Ukraine is hitting Americans in a pocketbook and many overseas in a stomach. From soaring food costs to skyrocketing fuel prices, the war in Ukraine is taking a painful toll at home and abroad. Ukrainian grain exports have collapsed and Western sanctions limit Russian oil and fertilizer exports. All this makes U.S. and European moves to boost overland grain shipments and Western production critical. House Ag Ranking Member Glenn G.T. Thompson.
We can help our farmers increase their yield. And even just the bushel increase in yield above and beyond what their normal baseline is, what they would normally expect to be able to produce, maybe a life saved somewhere in the world.
Russia is accused of weaponizing hunger with its blockade of U.S. grain ports and cutting in half normal grain exports while some farmers are trying to harvest crops wearing helmets and bulletproof vests. Food prices are up 10 to 20% at home and abroad. USAID is warning a famine in 10 countries and the White House predicts a possible mass starvation event. At home, fuel and fertilizer prices are crushing farmers' profits and emptying consumers' wallets. Missouri Representative Jason Smith.
In rural areas, inflation is up 130% more than that of urban areas, according to the Congressional Budget Office. In rural America, we have to pay $5 a gallon to drive 60 miles just to go to work, not 3 miles.
And oil, gasoline, and natural gas futures rose again at the end of last week as the U.S. slapped fresh economic sanctions on Iran to force them back into a nuclear agreement. And what could be the effects on agriculture of rising interest rates? USDA Ag News reporter Gary Crawford has the story.
What will be the effects of higher interest rates on farmers and agriculture?
I'm almost gun shy of making strong predictions in the environment we've been in the last couple of years.
Agriculture Department Chief Economist Seth Meyer says classic economics would say that normally
rising interest rates in the United States strengthens the dollar, makes us a little less export competitive.
But Meyer says this isn't a normal situation. Commodity prices are very high. Demand also continues high in light of short supplies of commodities like wheat and weather concerns for other crops. However, Meyer is not gun shy on making this projection for producers.
If you're a producer, the thing you're instantly going to see is if you're going to go in and borrow, you're going to see the rate increasing. And if consensus is right, that rate will continue to increase throughout the year.
But as far as the possible effects on land values and farm income, Meyer says it's impossible to know, at least right now. Gary Crawford reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture.
Leaders in the dairy industry say the Ocean Shipping Reform Act will help to alleviate supply chain issues at U.S. ports. Krista Harden, president and CEO of the U.S. Dairy Export Council, says the shipping crisis has cost dairy farmers more than $1 billion.
We guesstimate our industry's lost about $1.5 billion in increased export costs, as well as lost opportunities as these bottlenecks in our ports really did hamper getting product to customers. And, you know, after a while, when you can't fill an order, you become an unreliable source, and other sources are, and our competitors take the place of U.S. product. Even though we know we have the best product, we know there's great demand for it, you have to get the product to the consumer around the world, and that just has not been able to happen in the efficient, timely manner that our customers are relying on. So we're excited that this bill really does hopefully eliminate many of the problems that we have and get us, you know, products flowing more quickly in a timely manner to those customers.
Jim Mulhern, National Milk Producers Federation president and CEO, says the legislation should help U.S. dairy be a more reliable exporter to its customers.
You can't be an unreliable supplier to any customer, domestic or international, and have a future. The world market is incredibly important to the future of the U.S. dairy industry. We need to be a reliable supplier, and these problems at the port were creating huge problems for us in that regard. So this legislation approved, I will add, on a bipartisan basis, both in the House and Senate, with support from the Biden administration throughout the process, is going to be very important to helping unblock that bottleneck at the port.
While signing a bill, President Joe Biden says the legislation will help to lower costs for American retailers, farmers, and consumers.
There's giant potential sleeping in your soil. Under drought conditions, it's never been more important to wake it up. Phycoterra, a superior soil microbial food, activates the native microbes responsible for your soil's health and water-holding capacity. Adding Phycoterra to your crop increases water retention up to 10% and optimizes crop nutrient availability. Plus, it delivers excellent mixability and application flexibility, making it easy to add to your existing crop input strategy. Visit phycoterra.com to learn how you can wake up your soil's giant potential with Phycoterra.
A new study to improve irrigation tools for avocado growers. Here's the report with Kylie Harlan.
Most of the avocados produced in the United States are produced in the southern and central portions of California. Ali Montazar, UCCE Irrigation and Water Management Advisor in Imperial, Riverside, and San Diego counties, brings us more details about avocado production and the importance of proper irrigation.
Avocados are evergreen, high water use trees, primarily grown in southern and central California. And the problem is this region faces uncertain water supplies, mandatory reduction of water use, and the rising cost of water. So under these circumstances, I believe efficient use of irrigation water is one of the highest conservation priorities for the region. We know about Colorado River Basin. We know about the current water issues and pressure in California. And irrigation technology and strategies are very effective tools to mitigate the impact of drought and climate change. This is one aspect. This is one approach, effective approach to manage, and we need to do this management approaches. On the other hand, avocado is a subtropical rainforest tree, and therefore careful water management is crucial for its high yields and good quality fruit. I think this is the main point for crop. Water is the most critically important input to avocado production, and proper irrigation management is critical to managing tree nutrient and also avocado root rot. We call it phytophthorasynonomy. And irrigation management has some impact on avocado root rot. The other hand, avocado is one of the most salinity-sensitive crops produced in California. But the problem is it's commonly grown in area having saline irrigation water. So effective irrigation is very critical to ensure optimal yield and high quality avocados fruit using these water sources.
Since proper irrigation is an integral yet challenging part of avocado production, UC Davis is conducting an avocado irrigation study. The study will look at current irrigation methods and crop water consumption to help develop new irrigation methods and tools for producers.
Irrigation management in hilly areas is very challenging. So in South California, we have avocado groves mostly in sloping lands. In such condition, row orientation is very important driver for irrigation management. When I talk about row orientation, I mean south-facing slopes versus north-facing versus east and west slopes. So slopes is a challenge and also a major driver for irrigation management. Of course, climate, canopy features, size of crop, trees, and shaded area, soil, irrigation, salinity are also other drivers, impact irrigation management. So in this study, we define a very comprehensive study to consider all those drivers for a better understanding and developing more accurate crop water use information and crop coefficient for avocado cropping system in California. So the study looks specifically to convey accurate information on for more effective irrigation management under different conditions, and also develop cost-effective irrigation tools and management strategies for irrigation scheduling and more efficient irrigation water use. So there are, the major objectives we are following to answer.
The study is currently in the middle of its first year. Montazar tells us more about how the study is being conducted.
Well, currently we work with six avocado orchards in San Diego, Riverside, and Orange counties. So we use the combined cutting edge ground and remote sensing technology. We measure actual evapotranspiration, crop evapotranspiration, or ET, using surface renal and eddy covariance equipment, very well known approach for measuring actual water use. We have different soil moisture sensors in multiple depths and locations. We also continuously monitor plant water status. So in each site, we have more than 35 sensors, collect data on a 30 minutes a continuous basis, and we will do this over a 3-year period. So we are in the middle of the first year. In some of the sites, we will assess different irrigation strategies than other, than grower practice that will provide us a better understanding and how avocado responds to different irrigation strategies. So we work closely with the California Avocado Commission in this study. I would like to acknowledge their always support. Also, the support we received from USDA CDFA Specialty Crop Block Grant Program. My hope is to expand the experimental site to Ventura counties a little bit north than south in the next few months as well to develop more robust data set.
Montazar says he and his team at UC Davis look forward to continuing this research, and they ultimately hope to positively impact California's avocado growers.
I mentioned things about irrigation technology tools, but we know, irrigation tools and technologies are cost-effective tools. But we also know for a small farm, sometimes these tools are costly, and we know we have a lot of small farmer for avocado in California. The good news is that we are in California with a lot of support from the state and different agencies for improving irrigation system and management. There are incentives available that our growers can use for such improvements, such as CDFA, State Water Efficiency and Enhancement Program, NRCS Conservation Programs. We will also do our best to develop very user-friendly tools that can help small farm growers. I'm a cross-county advisor in South, and I'm working in the desert as well. This is what I learned from our growers. 90% of my research are conducted in growers' field. What I learned from our growers is that they are very knowledgeable. They have a common understanding that being efficient in resource use is the most effective tool and approach. We can address water quantity and quality issues. We can address climate change and drought issues. We are all at the same page. We all together to address this issue. And the University of California provides always full support to our growers to achieve full economic gains from their ag operation. And we will continue this approach.
This is Kylie Harlan reporting for My Ag Life.
JCS Marketing is your number one way to connect with the ag industry. Through print magazines, digital media, podcast, and live and virtual events, JCS Marketing has the reach to inform, educate, and influence growers in the Western United States.
Everywhere you go, you see West Coast Nut Magazine on every one of my customers' tables. So that tells you everything. It's there, so they're reading it.
Our My Ag Life platform includes podcast interviews and digital articles for busy professionals on the go. Our live events, continuing education webinars, and virtual conferences help growers connect with leading researchers and industry leaders. Let JCS Marketing help you connect.
That will wrap up today's show. You've been listening to the My Ag Life Daily News Report. I'm Lori Boyer. From all of us here at the JCS Marketing team, thank you for listening.